He grabbed Simon by the back of his coat and hauled him into a cosmetic store. It was massive on the inside, with rows of gleaming bottles everywhere. "And something unusual," she said, heading for the fragrance area. Isabel isn't going to want to smell like everyone else. She's going to want to smell like figs or vetiver or... figs? Figs have a smell? Simon looked horrified. Clary was about to laugh at him when her phone buzzed. It was her mother. "Where are you?" Clary rolled her eyes and texted back. Jocelyn still got nervous when she thought Clary was out with Jace. Even though, as Clary had pointed out, Jace was probably the safest boyfriend in the world since he was pretty much banned from 1. Getting angry, 2. Making sexual advances, and 3. Doing anything that would produce an adrenaline rush. On the other hand, he had been possessed. She and her mother had both watched while he stood by and let Sebastian threaten Luke. Clary still hadn't talked about everything she'd seen in the apartment she'd shared with Jason Sebastian, for that brief time out of time. A mixture of dream and nightmare. She'd never told her mother that Jace had killed someone. There were things Jocelyn didn't need to know. Things Clary didn't want to face herself. "There is so much in this store I can picture Magnus wanting," Simon said, picking up a glass bottle of body glitter suspended in some kind of oil. "Is it against some kind of rule to buy presents for someone who broke up with your friend?" "I guess it depends. Is Magnus your closer friend or Alec?"
"Alec remembers my name," said Simon, and he set the bottle back down. "And I feel bad for him. I understand why Magnus did it, but Alec is so wrecked. I feel like if someone loves you, they should forgive you if you're really sorry."
"I think it depends what you did," Clary said. "I don't mean Alec, I just mean in general. I'm sure Isabel would forgive you for anything," she added hastily.
Simon looked dubious.
"Hold still," she announced, wielding a bottle near his head. "In 3 minutes, I'm going to smell your neck."
"Well, I never," said Simon. "You've waited a long time to make your move, Frey, I'll say that for you."
Clary didn't bother with a smart retort. She was still thinking of what Simon had said about forgiveness and remembering someone else, someone else's voice and face and eyes. Sebastian sitting across from her at a table in Paris.
"Do you think you can forgive me? I mean, do you think forgiveness is possible for someone like me?"
"There are things you can never forgive," she said. "I can never forgive Sebastian."
"You don't love him."
"No, but he's my brother. If things were different..."
"But they're not different."
Clary abandoned the thought and leaned in to inhale instead. "You smell like figs and apricots."
"Do you really think Isabel wants to smell like a dried fruit plate?"
"Maybe not." Clary picked up another bottle. "So what are you gonna do?"
"When?"
Clary looked up from pondering the question of how a tube rose was different from a regular rose to see Simon looking at her with puzzlement in his brown eyes. She said, "Well, you can't live with Jordan forever, right? There's college."
"You're not going to college," he said.
"No, but I'm a shadow hunter. We keep studying after 18. We get posted to other institutes. That's our college."
"I don't like the thought of you going away."
He shoved his hands into the pockets of his coat.
"I can't go to college," he said. "My mother's not exactly going to pay for it, and I can't take out student loans. I'm legally dead, and besides, how long would it take everyone at school to notice they were getting older, but I wasn't? 16-year-olds don't look like college seniors, I don't know if you've noticed."
Clary set the bottle down.
"Simon, maybe I should get my mom something," he said bitterly.
"What says thanks for throwing me out of the house and pretending I died?
Orchids?"
But Simon's joking mood had gone.
"Maybe it's not like old times," he said. "I would have gotten you pencils usually, art supplies, but you don't draw anymore, do you? Except with your steely. You don't draw, and I don't breathe.
Not so much like last year." "Maybe you should talk to Raphael," Clary said.
"Raphael?"
"He knows how vampires live," Clary said. "How they make lives for themselves and how they make money, how they get apartments. He does know those things. He could help."
"He could, but he wouldn't," said Simon with a frown. "I haven't heard anything from the Dumour bunch since Maureen took over from Camille. I know Raphael is her second in command. I'm pretty sure they still think I have the mark of Cain, otherwise they would have sent someone after me by now. Matter of time.
No, they know not to touch you. It would be war with the Clave. The Institute's been very clear, said Clary. You're protected.
Clary, Simon said, none of us are protected.
Before Clary could answer, she heard someone call out her name. Thoroughly puzzled, she looked over and saw her mother shoving her way through a crowd of shoppers. Through the window, she could see Luke waiting outside on the sidewalk. In his flannel shirt, he looked out of place among the stylish New Yorkers. Breaking free of the crowd, Jocelyn caught up to them and threw her arms around Clary. Clary looked over her mother's shoulder, baffled at Simon. He shrugged.
Finally, Jocelyn released her and stepped back. I was so worried something had happened to you.
In Sephora? Clary said. Jocelyn's brow furrowed.
You haven't heard?
I would have thought Jace would have texted you by now.
Clary felt a sudden cold wash through her veins, as if she'd swallowed icy water.
No, what's going on?
I'm sorry, Simon, Jocelyn said, but Clary and I have to get to the Institute right away.
Not much had changed at Magnus's since the first time Jace had been there. The same small entryway and single yellow bulb. Jace used an open rune to get in through the front door, took the stairs two at a time, and buzzed Magnus's apartment bell. Safer than using another rune, he figured. After all, Magnus could be playing video games naked or really doing practically anything. Who knew what warlocks got up to in their spare time? Jace buzzed again, this time leaning firmly on the doorbell. Two more long buzzes, and Magnus finally yanked the door open, looking furious. He was wearing a black silk dressing gown over a white dress shirt and tweed pants. His feet were bare, his dark hair was tangled, and there was the shadow of stubble on his jaw. "What are you doing here?" he demanded. "My, my," said Jace. "So unwelcoming." "That's because you're not welcome." Jace raised an eyebrow. "I thought we were friends." "No, you are Alec's friend. Alec was my boyfriend, so I had to put up with you. But now he's not my boyfriend, so I don't have to put up with you. Not that any of you seem to realize it. You must be the, what, fourth of you lot to bother me?" Magnus counted off on his long fingers. "Clary, Isabel, Simon." "Simon came by." "You seem surprised." "I didn't think he was that invested in your relationship with Alec." "I don't have a relationship with Alec," said Magnus flatly. But Jace had already shouldered past him and was in his living room, looking around curiously. One of the things Jace had always secretly liked about Magnus's apartment was that it rarely looked the same way twice. Sometimes it was a big modern loft, sometimes it looked like a French bordello, or a Victorian opium den, or the inside of a spaceship. Right now, though, it was messy and dark. Stacks of old Chinese food cartons littered the coffee table. Chairman Miao lay on the rag rug, all four legs sticking straight out in front of him like a dead deer. "It smells like heartbreak in here," said Jace. "That's the Chinese food." Magnus threw himself onto the sofa and stretched out his long legs. "Go on, get it over with. Say whatever you came here to say." "I think you should get back together with Alec," said Jace. Magnus rolled his eyes up to the ceiling. "And why is that?" "Because he's miserable," said Jace. "And he's sorry. He's sorry about what he did. He won't do it again." "Oh, he won't sneak around behind my back with one of my exes planning to shorten my life again? Very noble of him." "Magnus. Besides, Camille's dead. He can't do it again." "You know what I mean," said Jace. "He won't lie to you, or mislead you, or hide things from you, or whatever it is you're actually upset about." He threw himself into a wing-back leather chair and raised an eyebrow. "So?" Magnus rolled onto his side. "What do you care if Alec's miserable?" "What do I care?" Jace said, so loudly that Chairman Miao sat bolt upright as if he'd been shocked. "Of course I care about Alec. He's my best friend, my parabatai. And he's unhappy. And so are you, by the look of things. Takeout containers everywhere. You haven't done anything to fix up the place. Your cat looks dead." "He's not dead." "I care about Alec," Jace said. fixing Magnus with an unswerving gaze. I care about him more than I care about myself. Don't you ever think, Magnus mused, pulling at a bit of peeling fingernail polish, that the whole Parabatai business is rather cruel? You can choose your Parabatai, but then you can never unchoose them, even if they turn on you. Look at Luke and Valentine. And though your Parabatai is the closest person in the world to you in some ways, you can't fall in love with them? And if they die, some part of you dies too. How do you know so much about Parabatai? I know shadow hunters, said Magnus, patting the sofa behind him so that the chairman leaped up onto the cushions and nudged at Magnus with his head. The warlock's long fingers sank into the cat's fur. I have for a long time. You are odd creatures, all fragile nobility and humanity on one side, and all the thoughtless fire of angels on the other. His eyes flicked toward Jace. You especially, Herondale, for you have the fire of angels in your blood. You've been friends with shadow hunters before? Friends, said Magnus. What does that mean, really? You'd know, said Jace. If you had any. Do you? Do you have friends? I mean, besides the people who come to your parties. Most people are afraid of you, or they seem to owe you something, or you slept with them once. But friends, I don't see you having a lot of those. Well, this is novel, said Magnus. None of the rest of your group has tried insulting me. Is it working? If you mean do I suddenly feel compelled to get back together with Alec, no, said Magnus. I have developed an odd craving for pizza, but that might be unrelated. Alec said you do that, said Jace. Deflect questions about yourself with jokes. Magnus narrowed his eyes. And I'm the only one who does that? Exactly, Jace said. Take it from someone who knows. You hate talking about yourself, and you'd rather make people angry than be pitied. How old are you, Magnus? The real answer. Magnus said nothing. What were your parents' names? Your father's name? Magnus glared at him out of gold-green eyes. If I wanted to lie on a couch and complain to someone about my parents, I'd hire a psychiatrist. Ah, said Jace, but my services are free. I heard that about you. Jace grinned and slid down in his chair. There was a pillow with a pattern of the Union Jack on the ottoman. He grabbed it and put it behind his head. I don't have anywhere to be. I can sit here all day. Great, Magnus said. I'm going to take a nap. He reached out for a crumpled blanket lying on the floor, just as Jace's phone rang. Magnus watched, arrested mid-motion, as Jace dug around in his pocket and flipped the phone open. It was Isabel. Jace? Yeah, I'm at Magnus's place. I think I might be making some headway. What's up? Come back, Isabel said, and Jace sat up straight, the pillow tumbling to the floor. Her voice was tightly strained. He could hear the sharpness in it, like the off notes of a badly tuned piano. To the Institute, right away, Jace. What is it? He asked. What's happened? And he saw Magnus sit up too, the blanket dropping from his hand. Sebastian, Isabel said. Jace closed his eyes. He saw golden blood and white feathers scattered across a marble floor. He remembered the apartment, a knife in his hands, the world at his feet, Sebastian's grip on his wrist, those fathomless black eyes looking at him with dark amusement. There was a buzzing in his ears. What is it? Magnus's voice cut through Jace's thoughts. He realized he was already at the door, the phone back in his pocket. He turned. Magnus was behind him, his expression stark. Is it Alec? Is he all right? What do you care? Said Jace, and Magnus flinched. Jace didn't think he'd ever seen Magnus flinch before. It was the only thing that kept Jace from slamming the door on the way out. There were dozens of unfamiliar coats and jackets hanging in the entryway of the Institute. Clary felt the tight buzzing of tension in her shoulders as she unzipped her own wool coat and hung it on one of the hooks that lined the walls. And Maris didn't say what this was about? Clary demanded. The edges of her voice had been rubbed thin by anxiety. Jocelyn had unwound a long gray scarf from around her neck and barely looked as Luke took it from her to drape it on a hook. Her green eyes were darting around the room, taking in the gate of the elevator, the arched ceiling overhead, the faded murals of men and angels. Luke shook his head. Just that there'd been an attack on the Clave, and we needed to get here as quickly as possible. It's the wee pot that concerns me. Jocelyn wound her hair up into a knot at the back of her head, and secured it with her fingers. I haven't been in an institute in years. Why do they want me here? Luke squeezed her shoulder reassuringly. Clary knew what Jocelyn feared, what they all feared. The only reason the Clave would want Jocelyn here was if there was news of her son. Maris said they'd be in the library, Jocelyn said. Clary led the way. She could hear Luke and her mother talking behind her, and the soft sound of their footsteps, Luke slower than they had once been. He hadn't entirely recovered from the injury that had nearly killed him in November.
You know why you're here, don't you? Breathed the soft voice in the back of her head. She knew it wasn't really there, but that didn't help.
She hadn't seen her brother since the fight at the Burren, but she carried him in some small part of her mind, an intrusive, unwelcome ghost.
Because of me. You always knew I hadn't gone away forever. I told you what would happen. I spelled it out for you. Erhome. I am coming.
They had reached the library, the door was half open, and a babble of voices spilled through. Jocelyn paused for a moment, her expression tight. Clary put her hand on the doorknob. Are you ready? She hadn't noticed till then what her mother was wearing. Black jeans, boots, and a black turtleneck. As if without thinking about it, she had put on the closest thing she had to fighting gear. Jocelyn nodded at her daughter. Someone had pushed back all the furniture in the library, clearing a large space in the middle of the room, just atop the mosaic of the angel. A massive table had been placed there, a huge slab of marble balanced on top of two kneeling stone angels. Around the table were seated the conclave. Some members, like Kadir and Maris, Clary knew by name. Others were just familiar faces. Maris was standing, ticking off names on her fingers as she chanted aloud.
Berlin, she said. No survivors. Bangkok. No survivors. Moscow. No survivors. Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, said Jocelyn. That was the Blackthorns, are they?
Maris looked startled, as if she hadn't realized Jocelyn had come in. Her blue eyes swept over Luke and Clary. She looked drawn and exhausted. Her hair scraped back severely, a stain, red wine or blood, on the sleeve of her tailored jacket.
There were survivors, she said. Children, they're in Idris now.
Helen, said Alec,
and Clary thought of the girl who had fought with them against Sebastian at the Burren. She remembered her in the nave of the Institute, a dark-haired boy clinging to her wrist.
My brother Julian.
Aline's girlfriend, Clary blurted out, and saw the conclave look at her with thinly veiled hostility.
They always did, as if who she was and what she represented made them almost unable to see her. Valentine's daughter. Valentine's daughter.
Is she all right?
She was in Idris with Aline, said Maris. Her younger brothers and sisters survived, although there seems to have been an issue with the eldest brother, Mark.
An issue, said Luke. What's going on exactly, Maris?
I don't think we'll know the whole story until we get to Idris, said Maris, smoothing back her already smooth hair.
But there have been attacks, several in the course of 2 nights, on 6 institutes.
We're not sure yet how the institutes were breached, but we know.
Sebastian, said Clary's mother.
She had her hands jammed into the pockets of her black trousers, but Clary suspected that if she hadn't, Clary would have been able to see that her mother's hands were tightened into fists.
Cut to the point, Maris, my son. You wouldn't have called me here if he wasn't responsible, would you?
Jocelyn's eyes met Maris's, and Clary wondered if this was how it had been when they'd both been in the circle, the sharp edges of their personalities rubbing up against each other, causing sparks. Before Maris could speak, the door opened and Jace came in. He was flushed with the cold, bareheaded, fair hair tousled by the wind. His hands were gloveless, red at the tips from the weather, scarred with marks new and old. He saw Clary and gave her a quick smile before settling into a chair propped against the wall. Luke, as usual, moved to make peace.
Maris, is Sebastian responsible?
Maris took a deep breath.
Yes, yes he was, and he had the Indocant with him. Of course it's Sebastian, said Isabel.
She had been staring down at the table. Now she raised her head. Her face was a mask of hatred and rage. He said he was coming. Well, now he's come.
Maris sighed. We assumed he'd attack Idris. That was what all the intelligence indicated. Not institutes.
So he did the thing you didn't expect, said Jace. He always does the thing you don't expect. Maybe the Clave should plan for that.
Jace's voice dropped.
I told you he'd want more soldiers.
Jace, said Maris, you're not helping.
I wasn't trying to.
I would have thought he'd attack here first, said Alec, given what Jace was saying before, and it's true. Everyone he loves or hates is here.
He doesn't love anyone, Jocelyn snapped.
Mom, stop, Clary said. Her heart was pounding, sick in her chest. Yet at the same time, there was a strange sense of relief. All this time waiting for Sebastian to come, and now he had. Now the waiting was over. Now the war would start.
So what are we supposed to do? Fortify the Institute? Hide?
Let me guess, said Jace, his voice dripping sarcasm. The Clave's called for a council, another meeting.
The Clave has called for immediate evacuation, said Maris.
And at that, everyone went silent, even Jace.
All institutes ought to empty out. All conclaves must return to Alicante. The wards around Idris will be doubled after tomorrow. No one will be able to come in or get out.
Isabel swallowed. When do we leave New York?
Maris straightened up. Some of her usual imperious air was back. Her mouth a thin line, her jaw set with determination.
Go and pack, she said. We leave tonight.
2. Stand or fall. Waking was like being plunged into a bath of icy water. Emma sat up straight, torn out of her sleep, her mouth opening on a scream. Jules! Jules! There was movement in the darkness, a hand on her arm, and a sudden light that stung her eyes. Emma gasped and scrabbled backward, pushing herself among the cushions. She was lying on a bed, she realized, pillows stacked behind her back and the sheets twisted around her body in a sweaty tangle. She blinked the darkness out of her eyes, trying to focus. Helen Blackthorne was leaning over her, blue-green eyes worried, a witch-light glowing in her hand. They were in a room with a steeply gabled roof, slanting down hard on either side, like in a fairy tale cabin. A big four-poster wooden bed was in the center of the room, and in the shadows behind Helen, Emma could see furniture looming. A big square wardrobe, a long sofa, a table with rickety legs. Where am I? Emma gasped. Idris, Helen said, stroking her arm in a soothing manner. You made it to Idris, Emma. We're in the attic of the Penhallows house. My parents... Emma's teeth chattered. Where are my parents? You came through the portal with Julian, said Helen, gently, not answering her question. All of you made it through somehow. It's a miracle, you know. The Clave opened the way, but portal travel is hard. Drew came through holding on to Tavi, and the twins came through together, of course. And then, when we'd almost given up hope, you two. You were unconscious, Em. She brushed Emma's hair back from her forehead. We were so worried. You should have seen Jules. What's happening? Emma demanded. She pulled back from Helen's touch, not because she didn't like Helen, but because her heart was pounding. What about Mark and Mr. Blackthorne? Helen hesitated. Sebastian Morgenstern has attacked 6 institutes over the past few days. He's either killed everyone or turned them. He can use the infernal cup to make shadow hunters not themselves anymore. I saw him do it, Emma whispered. To Katerina, and he turned your father too. They were going to do it to Mark, but Sebastian said he didn't want him because he had fairy blood. Helen flinched. We have reason to think Mark's still alive, she said. They were able to track him to a point where he disappeared, but the runes indicate he's not dead. It's possible that Sebastian may be holding him hostage. My parents, Emma said again, through a drier throat this time. She knew what it meant that Helen hadn't answered her question the first time she'd asked it. Where are they? They weren't in the Institute, so Sebastian couldn't have hurt them. Helen exhaled. She looked young suddenly, almost as young as Jules. Sebastian doesn't just attack Institutes. He murders or takes Conclave members from their own homes. Your parents, the Clave tried to track them, but they couldn't. Then their bodies washed up in Marina del Rey on the beach this morning. The Clave doesn't know what happened exactly, but... Helen's voice trailed off into a meaningless string of words. Words such as positive identification, and scars and markings on the bodies, and no evidence recovered. Things like in the water for hours, and no way to transport the corpses. And given all the proper funeral rites burned on the beach as they had both requested, you understand. Emma screamed. It was a scream with no words at first, rising higher and higher, a scream that tore her throat and brought the taste of metal into her mouth. It was a scream of loss so immense there was no speech for it. It was the wordless cry of having the sky over your head, the air in your lungs ripped away from you forever. She screamed and screamed again and tore at the mattress with her hands until she gouged through it. And there were feathers and blood stuck under her fingernails, and Helen was sobbing, trying to hold her, saying, Emma, Emma, please, Emma, please. And then there was more illumination. Someone had turned on a lantern in the room, and Emma heard her name, in a soft, urgent, familiar voice, and Helen let her go, and there was Jules, leaning against the edge of the bed and holding something out to her, something that gleamed gold in the new harsh light. It was Cortana, unsheathed, lying bare across his palms like an offering. Emma thought she was still screaming, but she took the sword, the words flashing across the blade, burning across her eyes. I am Cortana, of the same steel and temper as Joyeuse and Durandal. She heard her father's voice in her head. Carstairs have carried this sword for generations. The inscription reminds us that shadow hunters are the angels' weapons. Temper us in the fire and we grow stronger. When we suffer, we survive. Emma choked, pushing back on the screams, forcing them down and into silence. This was what her father had meant. Like Cortana, she had steel in her veins and she was meant to be strong. Even if her parents were not there to see it, she would be strong for them. She hugged the sword against her chest. As if from a distance, she heard Helen exclaim and reach for her. But Julian, who always knew what Emma needed, tugged Helen's hand back. Emma's fingers were around the blade, and blood was running down her arms and chest where the tip sliced at her collarbone. She didn't feel it. Rocking back and forth, she clutched the sword like it was the only thing she had ever loved, and let the blood spill down instead of tears.
Simon couldn't quite shake a feeling of déjà vu. He'd been here before, standing just outside the Institute, watching the Lightwoods disappear through a shimmering portal. Though then, back before he had ever borne the mark of Cain, the portal had been created by Magnus, and this time it was under the oversight of a blue-skinned warlock woman named Katerina Loss. That time, he'd been summoned because Jace had wanted to talk to him about Clary before he disappeared into another country. This time, Clary was disappearing with them. He felt her hand on his, her fingers lightly wringing his wrist. The whole of the Conclave, nearly every shadow hunter in New York City, had come through the gates of the Institute and passed through the shimmering portal. The Lightwoods, as guardians of the Institute, would go last. Simon had been here since the start of twilight, bars of red sky sliding down behind the buildings of the New York skyline. And now Witchlight lit the scene in front of him, picking out small glimmering details. Isabel's whip, the spark of fire that jumped from Alec's family ring as he gestured, the glints in Jace's pale hair.
"It looks different," Simon said.
Clary looked up at him. Like the rest of the Shadowhunters, she was dressed in what Simon could only describe as a cloak. It seemed to be what they broke out during cold winter weather, made of a heavy, velvety black material that buckled across the chest. He wondered where she'd gotten it. Maybe they just issued them.
"What does?"
"The portal," he said. "It looks different from when Magnus did it. More blue. Maybe they all have different senses of style." Simon looked over at Katerina. She seemed briskly efficient, like a hospital nurse or a kindergarten teacher. Definitely not like Magnus.
"How's Izzy?"
"Worried, I think. Everyone's worried." There was a short silence. Clary exhaled, her breath floating white on the winter air.
"I don't like you going," Simon said, at exactly the same time that Clary said. "I don't like going and leaving you here."
"I'll be fine," Simon said. "I have Jordan looking after me." Indeed, Jordan was there, sitting on top of the wall that ran around the Institute and looking watchful.
"And no one's tried to kill me in at least 2 weeks."
"Not funny," Clary scowled.
The problem, Simon reflected, was that it was difficult to reassure someone that you'd be fine when you were a daylighter.
Some vampires might want Simon on their side, eager to benefit from his unusual powers. Camille had attempted to recruit him, and others might try. But Simon had the distinct impression that the vast majority of vampires wanted to kill him.
"I'm pretty sure Maureen's still hoping to get her hands on me," Simon said.
Maureen was the head of the New York vampire clan, and believed that she was in love with Simon, which would have been less awkward if she hadn't been 13 years old.
"I know the Clave warned people not to touch me, but..."
"Maureen wants to touch you," Clary said with a sideways grin. "Bad touch."
"Silence, Frey."
"Jordan will keep her off you." Simon looked ahead meditatively. He had been trying not to stare at Isabel, who had greeted him with only a brief wave since he'd arrived at the Institute. She was helping her mother, her black hair flying in the brisk wind.
"You could just go up and talk to her," Clary said, "instead of staring like a creeper."
"I'm not staring like a creeper. I'm staring subtly."
"I noticed," Clary pointed out.
"Look, you know how Isabel gets. When she's upset, she withdraws. She won't talk to anyone but Jace or Alec, because she hardly trusts anyone. But if you're going to be her boyfriend, you have to show her you're one of those people she can trust."
"I'm not her boyfriend. At least, I don't think I'm her boyfriend. She's never used the word boyfriend anyway."
Clary kicked him in the ankle. "You two need to DTR more than any other people I've ever met."
"Defining relationships over here?" said a voice from behind them.
Simon turned and saw Magnus, very tall against the dark sky behind them. He was soberly dressed, jeans and a black t-shirt, his dark hair partly in his eyes.
"I see that even as the world plunges into darkness and peril, you two stand around discussing your love lives.
Teenagers."
"What are you doing here?" Simon said, too surprised for a smart comeback.
"Came to see Alec," Magnus said.
Clary raised her eyebrows at him. "What was that about teenagers?"
Magnus held up a warning finger.
"Don't overstep yourself, Biscuit," he said, and moved past them, disappearing into the crowd around the portal.
"Biscuit," said Simon.
"Believe it or not, he's called me that before," Clary said.
"Simon, look."
She turned toward him, tugging his hand out of his jeans pocket.
She looked down at it and smiled.
"The ring," she said.
"Handy when it worked, wasn't it?"
Simon looked down as well. A hammered gold ring in the shape of a leaf encircled his right ring finger. It had once been a connection to Clary. Now, with hers destroyed, it was only a ring, but he kept it regardless. He knew it was a little close to having half of a BFF necklace, but he couldn't help it. It was a beautiful object, and still a symbol of the connection between them. She squeezed his hand hard, raising her eyes to his. Shadows moved in the green of her irises. He could tell she was afraid.
"I know it's just a council meeting," Clary started to say, "but you're staying in Idris."
Only until they can figure out what happened with the institutes and how to protect them, said Clary. Then we'll come back. I know phones and texting and all that, that doesn't work in Idris, but if you need to talk to me, tell Magnus. He'll find a way to get me a message. Simon felt his throat tighten. Clary, I love you, she said. You're my best friend. She let go of his hand, her eyes shining. No, don't say anything. I don't want you to say anything. She turned and almost ran back toward the portal, where Jocelyn and Luke were waiting for her, three packed duffel bags at their feet. Luke glanced across the courtyard at Simon, his expression thoughtful. But where was Isabel? The crowd of shadow hunters had thinned. Jace had moved to stand beside Clary, his hand on her shoulder. Maris was near the portal, but Isabel, who had been with her... Simon, said a voice at his shoulder, and he turned to see Izzy, her face a pale smudge between dark hair and dark cloak, looking at him, her expression half angry, half sad. I guess this is the part where we say goodbye. Okay, Magnus said. You wanted to talk to me, so talk. Alec looked at him, wide-eyed. They had gone around the side of the church and were standing in a small winter-burned garden, among leafless hedges. Thick vines covered the stone wall and rusted gate nearby, now so denuded by winter that Alec could see the mundane street through the gaps in the iron door. A stone bench was nearby, its rough surface crusted with ice. I wanted... What? Magnus looked at him darkly, as if he had done something stupid. Alec suspected that he had. His nerves were jangling together like wind chimes, and he had a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. The last time he had seen Magnus, the warlock had been walking away from him, vanishing into a disused subway tunnel, getting smaller and smaller until he disappeared. Aku Shinta Kamu, he'd said to Alec. I love you in Indonesian. It had given Alec a spark of hope, enough that he'd called Magnus dozens of times, enough to keep him checking his phone, checking the mail, even checking the windows of his room, which seemed strange and empty and unfamiliar without Magnus in it, not his room at all, for magically delivered notes or messages. And now Magnus was standing in front of him, with his raggedy black hair and slit-pupiled cat eyes, and his voice like dark molasses, and his cool, sharp, beautiful face that gave nothing whatsoever away, and Alec felt like he had swallowed glue. Wanted to talk to me, Magnus said. I assume that was the meaning of all those phone calls, and why you sent all your stupid friends over to my apartment. Or do you just do that to everyone? Alec swallowed against the dryness in his throat and said the first thing that came into his head. Aren't you ever going to forgive me? Magnus broke off and looked away, shaking his head. Alec, I have forgiven you. It doesn't seem like it. You seem angry. When Magnus looked back at him, it was with a gentler expression. I'm worried about you, he said. The attacks on the institutes. I just heard. Alec felt dizzy. Magnus forgave him. Magnus was worried about him. Did you know we were leaving for Idris? Katerina told me she'd been summoned to make a portal. I guessed, Magnus said wryly. I was a little surprised you hadn't called or texted to tell me you were going away. Well, you never answer my calls or texts, said Alec. That hasn't stopped you before. Everyone gives up eventually, Alec said. Besides, Jace broke my phone. Magnus huffed out a breath of laughter. Oh, Alexander. What? Alec asked, honestly puzzled. You're so... I really want to kiss you. Magnus said abruptly, and then shook his head. See, this is why I haven't been willing to see you. But you're here now, Alec said. He remembered the first time Magnus had ever kissed him, against the wall outside his apartment, and all his bones had turned to liquid, and he thought, oh right, this is what it's supposed to be like. I get it now. You could. I can't, Magnus said. It's not working. It wasn't working. You have to see that, don't you? His hands were on Alec's shoulders.
Alec could feel Magnus's thumb brush against his neck, over his collar, and his whole body jumped. "Don't you?" Magnus said, and kissed him. Alec leaned into the kiss. It was utterly quiet. He heard the crunch of his boots on the snowy ground as he moved forward, Magnus's hand sliding around to steady the back of his neck, and Magnus tasted like he always did, sweet and bitter and familiar. And Alec parted his lips to gasp or breathe Magnus in, but it was too late because Magnus broke away from him with a wrench and stepped backward and it was over. "What?" Alec said, feeling stunned and strangely diminished. "Magnus, what?"
"I shouldn't have done that," Magnus said, all in a rush.
He was clearly agitated, in a way Alec had rarely seen him, a flush along his high cheekbones. "I forgive you, but I can't be with you. I can't. It doesn't work. I'm going to live forever, or at least until someone finally kills me, and you're not, and it's too much for you to take on."
"Don't tell me what's too much for me," said Alec with deadly flatness.
Magnus so rarely looked surprised that the expression seemed almost foreign on his face. "It's too much for most people," he said, "most mortals, and not easy on us either. Watching someone you love age and die. I knew a girl once, a mortal like me."
"And she was with someone mortal?" said Alec. "What happened?"
"He died," Magnus said. There was a finality to the way that he said it that spoke of a deeper grief than words could paint. His cat's eyes shone in the dark. "I don't know why I thought this would ever work," he said. "I'm sorry, Alec. I shouldn't have come."
"No," Alec said, "you shouldn't."
Magnus was looking at Alec a little warily, as if he had approached someone familiar on the street only to find out they were a stranger.
"I don't know why you did," Alec said. "I know I've been torturing myself for weeks now about you, and what I did, and how I shouldn't have done it. Shouldn't ever have talked to Camille. I've been sorry, and I've understood, and I've apologized and apologized, and you haven't ever been there. I did all that without you, so it makes me wonder what else I could do without you." He looked at Magnus meditatively.
"It was my fault what happened, but it was your fault too. I could have learned not to care that you are immortal and I'm mortal. Everyone gets the time they get together and no more. Maybe we're not so different that way. But you know what I can't get past? That you never tell me anything. I don't know when you were born. I don't know anything about your life, what your real name is, or about your family, or what the first face you ever loved was, or the first time your heart was broken. You know everything about me, and I know nothing about you. That's the real problem."
"I told you," Magnus said softly, "on our first date, that you would have to take me as I came, no questions."
Alec waved that away. "That's not a fair thing to ask. And you know, you knew. I didn't understand enough about love then to understand that. You act like you're the wronged party. But you had a hand in this, Magnus."
"Yes," Magnus said after a pause. "Yes, I suppose I did."
"But that doesn't change anything?"
Alec said, feeling the cold air stealing under his ribcage. "It never does with you."
"I can't change," Magnus said. "It's been too long. We petrify, you know, immortals, like fossils turned to stone. I thought when I met you that you had all this wonder and all this joy, and everything was new to you, and I thought it would change me, but..."
"Change yourself," Alec said,
but it didn't come out angry or stern, as he had intended it, but soft, like a plea. But Magnus only shook his head.
"Alec," he said, "you know my dream, the one about the city made of blood, and blood in the streets, and towers of bone. If Sebastian gets what he wants, that will be this world. The blood will be Nephilim blood. Go to Idris. You're safer there. But don't be trusting, and don't let your guard down. I need you to live," he breathed, and turned around very abruptly and walked away. "I need you to live." Alex sat down on the frozen stone bench and put his face in his hands.
Not goodbye forever, Simon protested, but Isabel just frowned.
Come here, she said, and tugged at his sleeve.
She was wearing dark red velvet gloves, and her hand looked like a splash of blood against the navy fabric of his jacket. Simon pushed the thought away. He wished he wouldn't think about blood at inopportune times.
Come where?
Isabel just rolled her eyes and pulled him sideways into a shadowed alcove near the front gates of the Institute. The space wasn't a large one, and Simon could feel the heat from Isabel's body. Warmth and cold didn't affect him since he'd become a vampire, unless it was the heat of blood. He didn't know if it was because he'd drunk Isabel's blood before, or if it was something deeper, but he was aware of the pulse of blood through her veins the way he was of no one else's.
I wish I were coming with you to Idris, he said without preamble. You're safer here, she said, though her dark eyes softened. Besides, we're not going forever.
The only downworlders who can go to Alicante are council members, because they're going to have a meeting, figure out what we're all going to do, and probably send us back out. We can't hide in Idris while Sebastian rampages around outside it. Shadow hunters don't do that.
He stroked a finger down her cheek. But you want me to hide here?
You've got Jordan to watch you here, she said.
Your own personal bodyguard.
You're Clary's best friend, she added. Sebastian knows that. You're hostage material. You should be where he isn't.
He's never shown any interest in me before. I don't see why he'd start now.
She shrugged, pulling her cloak tighter around herself.
He's never shown any interest in anyone but Clary and Jace, but that doesn't mean he won't start. He's not stupid.
She said it grudgingly, as if she hated to give Sebastian even that much credit.
Clary would do anything for you.
She'd do anything for you too, Izzy. And at Isabel's doubtful look, he cupped her cheek.
Okay. So if you won't be gone all that long, then what's all this about then?
She made a face. Her cheeks and mouth were rosy, the cold bringing the red to the surface. He wished he could press his cold lips to hers, so full of blood and life and warmth. But he was conscious of her parents watching.
I heard Clary when she was saying goodbye to you. She said she loved you.
Simon stared.
Yes, but she didn't mean it that way, Izzy. I know that, Isabel protested. Please, I know that. But it's just that she says it so easily and you say it back so easily. And I've never said it to anyone. Not anyone who wasn't related to me.
But if you say it, he said, you could get hurt. That's why you don't.
So could you.
Her eyes were big and black, reflecting the stars.
Get hurt. I could hurt you.
I know, Simon said. I know, and I don't care.
Jace told me once you'd walk all over my heart in high-heeled boots, and it hasn't stopped me.
Isabel gave a little gasp of startled laughter.
He said that. And you stuck around.
He leaned in toward her. If he had breath, it would have stirred her hair. I would consider it an honor. She turned her head, and their lips brushed together. Hers were achingly warm. She was doing something with her hands. Unfastening her cloak, he thought for a moment. But surely Isabel wasn't about to start taking her clothes off in front of her entire family. Not that Simon was sure he'd have the fortitude to stop her. She was Isabel, after all, and she had almost, almost, said she loved him. Her lips moved against his skin as she spoke.
Take this, she whispered.
And he felt something cold at the back of his neck, and the smooth glide of velvet as she drew back and her gloves brushed his throat. He glanced down. Against his chest gleamed a blood-red square, Isabel's ruby pendant. It was a shadow hunter heirloom, enchanted to detect the presence of demonic energy.
I can't take this, he said, shocked. Iz, this must be worth a fortune.
She squared her shoulders. It's a loan. Not a gift. Keep it until I see you again. She brushed her gloved fingers across the ruby. There's an old story that it came into our family by way of a vampire, so it's fitting.
Isabella,
don't, she said, cutting him off, though he didn't know exactly what he'd been about to say.
Don't say it. Not now.
She was backing away from him. He could see her family behind her, all that was left of the conclave. Luke had gone through the portal, and Jocelyn was in the middle of following him. Alec, coming round the side of the Institute with his hands in his pockets, glanced over at Isabel and Simon, raised an eyebrow, and kept walking.
Just don't date anyone else while I'm gone, okay?
He stared after her.
Does that mean we're dating?
He said. But she only quirked a smile, and then turned and dashed toward the portal. He saw her take Alec's hand, and they stepped through together. Maris followed, and then Jace, and then finally, Clary was the last, standing beside Katerina, framed by sizzling blue light. She winked at Simon and stepped through. He saw the whirl of the portal as it caught her, and then she was gone. Simon put his hand to the ruby at his throat. He thought he could feel a beat inside the stone, a shifting pulse. It was almost like having a heart again.
3. Birds to the Mountain. Clary set her bag down by the door and looked around. She could hear her mother and Luke moving around her, putting down their own luggage, turning on the witch lights that illuminated Armitage's house. Clary braced herself. They still had little idea how Armitage had been taken by Sebastian. Though the place had already been examined by council members for dangerous materials, Clary knew her brother. If the mood had taken him, he would have destroyed everything in the house, just to show that he could. Turned the sofas to kindling, shattered the glass in the mirrors, blown the windows to smithereens. She heard her mother give a small exhale of relief and knew Jocelyn must have been thinking what Clary was. Whatever had happened, the house looked fine. There was nothing in it to indicate that harm had come to Armitage. Books were stacked on the coffee table, the floors were dusty but uncluttered. The photographs on the walls were straight. Clary saw with a pang that there was a recent photograph near the fireplace of her, Luke, and Jocelyn at Coney Island, arms around one another smiling. She thought of the last time she had seen Luke's sister, Sebastian, forcing Armitage to drink from the infernal cup as she screamed in protest. The way the personality had faded out of her eyes after she had swallowed its contents. Clary wondered if that was what it was like to watch someone die. Not that she hadn't seen death, too. Valentine had died in front of her. Surely she was too young to have so many ghosts. Luke had moved to look at the fireplace and the photos hanging around it. He reached out to touch one that showed two blue-eyed children. One of them, the younger boy, was drawing, while his sister looked on, her expression fond. Luke looked exhausted. Their portal travel had taken them to the guard, and they had walked down through the city to Armitage's house. Luke still winced often from the pain of the wound in his side that hadn't quite healed. But Clary doubted the injury was what was affecting him. The quiet in Armitage's house. The homey rag rugs on the floor, the carefully arranged personal mementos. Everything spoke of an ordinary life, interrupted in the most terrible way possible. Jocelyn moved over to put her hand on Luke's shoulder, murmuring soothingly. He turned in the circle of her arms, putting his head against her shoulder. It was more comforting than in any way romantic, but Clary still felt as if she had stumbled on a private moment. Soundlessly, she plucked up her duffel bag and made her way up the stairs. The spare room hadn't changed. Small, the walls painted white, the windows like portholes, circular. There was the window Jace had crawled through one night, and the same colourful quilt on the bed. She dropped her bag onto the floor near the nightstand. The nightstand where Jace had left a letter in the morning telling her he was going and he wasn't coming back. She sat down on the edge of the bed, trying to shake off the web of memories. She hadn't realized how hard it would be to be back in Idris. New York was home, normal. Idris was war and devastation. In Idris, she had seen death for the first time. Her blood was humming, pounding hard in her ears. She wanted to see Jace. To see Alec and Isabel, they would ground her, give her a sense of normalcy. She was able, very faintly, to hear her mother and Luke moving around downstairs, possibly even the clink of cups in the kitchen. She swung herself off the bed and went to the foot, where a square trunk rested. It was the trunk Armitage had brought up for her when she had been here before, telling her to go through it to find clothes. She knelt down now and opened it, the same clothes carefully packed away between layers of paper, school uniforms, practical sweaters and jeans, more formal shirts and skirts, and beneath that, a dress Clary had first thought was a wedding gown. She drew it out. Now that she was more familiar with shadow hunters and their world, she recognized it for what it was. Morning clothes. A white dress, simple. The close-fitting jacket, with silver morning runes worked into the material. And there, the cuffs, an almost invisible design of birds. Herons. Clary laid the clothes carefully on the bed. She could see, in her mind's eye, Armitage wearing these clothes when Stephen Herondale had died. Putting them on carefully, smoothing down the fabric, buttoning the jacket clothes, all to mourn a man to whom she'd no longer been married. Widow's clothes for someone who had not been able to call herself a widow. Clary? It was her mother leaning in the doorway, watching her. What are those? Oh. She crossed the room, touched the fabric of the dress and sighed. Oh, Armitage. She never did get over Stephen, did she? Asked Clary. Sometimes people don't. Jocelyn's hand moved from the dress to Clary's hair, tucked it back with quick motherly precision. And Nephilim, we do tend to love very overwhelmingly. To fall in love only once, to die of grief over love. My old tutor used to say that the hearts of Nephilim were like the hearts of angels. They felt every human pain and never healed. But you did. You loved Valentine, but now you love Luke. I know. Jocelyn's look was far away. It wasn't until I spent more time in the mundane world that I started to realize that it wasn't how most human beings thought of love. I realized that you might have it more than once, that your heart could heal, that you could love over and over again. And I always loved Luke. I might not have known it, but I always did love him. Jocelyn pointed at the clothes on the bed. You should wear the morning jacket, she said, tomorrow. Startled, Clary said, To the meeting? Shadow hunters have died and been turned dark, said Jocelyn. Every shadow hunter lost is someone's son, brother, sister, cousin. Nephilim are a family. A dysfunctional family, but... She touched her daughter's face, her own expression hidden in the shadows. Get some sleep, Clary, she said. Tomorrow is going to be a long day. After the door shut behind her mother, Clary put on her nightgown and then clambered obediently into bed. She shut her eyes and tried to sleep, but sleep wouldn't come. Images kept bursting behind her eyelids like fireworks, angels falling from the sky, golden blood, ethereal in his chains with his blinded eyes, telling her of the images of runes he had given her through her life, the visions and dreams of the future. She remembered her dreams of her brother with black wings that spilled blood walking across a frozen lake. She threw the coverlet off. She felt hot and itchy, too strung up to sleep. After getting out of bed, she padded downstairs in search of a glass of water. The living room was half-lit, dim witchlight spilling down the corridor. Murmurs came from beyond the door. Someone was awake and talking in the kitchen. Clary moved down the corridor warily, until soft, overheard whispers began to take on shape and familiarity. She recognized her mother's voice first, taut with distress. "But I just don't understand how it could have been in the cupboard," she was saying. "I haven't seen it since Valentine took everything we owned back in New York." Luke spoke. "Didn't Clary say that Jonathan had it?" "Yes, but then it would have been destroyed with that foul apartment, wouldn't it?" Jocelyn's voice rose as Clary moved to stand in the doorway of the kitchen. "The one with the clothes Valentine bought for me, as if I were coming back." Clary stood very still. Her mother and Luke were sitting at the kitchen table. Her mother had her head down on one hand and Luke was rubbing her back. Clary had told her mother everything about the apartment, about how Valentine had maintained it with all Jocelyn's things there, determined that one day his wife would come back and live with him. Her mother had listened calmly, but clearly the story had upset her much more than Clary had realized. "He's gone now, Jocelyn."